kind of in between three guys at this point, which, you know, we'll save that clip for later, I guess.
So you feel right at home. Yeah.
Oh, I do.
Comfort.
There's a lot of comfort here.
Hello, and welcome to episode 46 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's fantasy manager and a man with a crippling addiction to Pepsi products, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, the guy who is way, way into salads right now, Mauricio Rubio, and the bane of my G-Chat existence, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone and tell them where they can find you on the interwebs. And since Brett's back, let's start with Brett.
Thanks, Ben. You can find me at baseballprospectus.com and thedynastyguru.com and on Twitter at dynastyguru. Mal?
You can find me at baseballprospectus.com and you can also find me on Twitter at mrubio52. Craig?
You can find me on Baseball Prospectus, The Dynasty Guru, and Fox Sports / MLB. And you can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in currently drinking Goldstein. Ben?
You threw that Fox Sports in there real smooth.
Thank you. Yes.
It's good stuff, though. It's good stuff. You can also find me at Baseball Prospectus and the Dynasty Guru. You can now find me at BP Boston. Please check that out. And you can find me on Twitter at Ben Carsley. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle. You can find us on Facebook, and you can ask us questions and talk to us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So before we get into the real questions tonight, this is the first time all four of us are back together again since Arizona, and I know we spent some time at our last podcast rehashing the events of that trip, but now that we're all together, just real quick, Brett, what's the one thing you learned about a Tino member in Arizona that you'll never forget?
That I'll never forget?
Yeah, or at least for a while until Alzheimer's sets in because you're older than us.
Yeah, well, if Craig ever tells you he doesn't snore, he's full of shit.
Wow. See, I found out the similar thing because Craig shares beds with many people. Mao, what about you?
BP thing that I'll never forget is that you have a very odd infatuation with me being fun when you're drunk.
That's fair. Craig?
I just wrote you took my salad thing from my chat yesterday about Mal.
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, you can explain that, I think. You can still toss a salad out there if you need to.
I'd rather not. That's more of a personal thing, I guess. I guess I'll say I'm surprised at Ben's eloquence when he's drunk and angry, sending texts in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not directly about us, but I'd say the thing that I learned is that really, like, Tino should have been a five-person show, and Jeff Quinton should be on it. It's just he's the missing ingredient. All right. Well, that's out of the way. Now it feels like home again, and I feel safe. So we'll get into reader emails in a second. The second half of the show tonight, we're going to do something fun and I think interesting. We are going to live draft our Hacking Mass teams for 2015. We'll explain what Hacking Mass is in the second portion of the show if you are not aware. But the one other time we drafted something live on Tino, I actually thought it went pretty well. So this was Brett's idea. Shockingly, it's a pretty good one. So that's what you can expect after the reader emails. But first, as we are prone to do, we are going to hit up a few reader emails. I'll say, not the strongest crop, not terribly inspired. When I critiqued our readers on Twitter for the quite frankly lackluster caliber of these questions, a bunch of people shot back saying that our scheduling is fairly lackluster, so that's fair. So you forgive us, we'll forgive you, and let's all do better next week. But our first question is from Avery. Avery says, howdy, Tino crew. Has there been a prospect that most people were down on, but one of y'all might have seen something different or just believed they had more potential than most writers thought and they ended up succeeding, either by climbing to the top 50 prospects or making it to the big leagues? I have no idea how to word that question. Tennessee isn't the best place to learn grammar. Have an okay day, Avery. So, not the first time we've been asked this question or something fairly similar, but I feel like we tried to put a little more thought into it this time. Because as we were discussing earlier, it really is hard to, you know, say people who aren't super obvious, because even though they appear obvious to you now, they might not have been when we initially hopped on that bandwagon. But with that caveat out of the way, Craig, why don't you give us one or two guys you hit on early or hit on late and we're just right on?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of these guys aren't really going to be a surprise to people who listen to us, because we kind of talk about them early or just a lot, because, you know, you're only right so much and you have to cling to what you actually get. So the first guy for me is Arizmendi Alcantara. And I think, you know, I recall being on him early before there was a lot of any hype surrounding him. I liked his age relative to his level. I liked that he kind of contributed across all five fantasy categories. I liked that he got better as he moved up levels. That said a lot to me. And so that was one guy who I kind of bid on early, and it's worked out so far. Obviously, you know, last year was a rough introduction to the majors, but he still showed that power and speed combination that could make him valuable, even if the hit tool is, you know, suboptimal. The other guy I'd throw out there is Jordano Ventura. I wrote about him in 2012 over at Fake Teams. He had added, you know, 10 miles per hour to his fastball since he signed. There was a lot of questions about whether he would hold up as a starter, and I kind of just believed he had the three-pitch mix to do it, and if the Royals gave him the opportunity, that he'd prove them that he could hold up as a starter. And so far that's been the case, weird thumb injury cramp aside. So I guess, you know, those are two guys that I know I've talked about before, but they're probably two of my biggest hits. Mal, who do you have?
You know, it's kind of a little bit of a different situation, I think, but, you know, because he ended up even exceeding my expectations. But, you know, when Jose Quintana came over from the New York Yankees to the Chicago White Sox, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot of fanfare around him, and for, you know, a lot of good reasons. He had sort of a boring profile when he was ascending his way up into AA with the Sox. And when he eventually did get the call in 2012, you know, I think that the main thing for me was that I always, you know, just kind of looking at his numbers and reading what reports were out there on him, I always thought he would be a competent major league starter. And he's clearly kind of turned into something more than that. You know, he's kind of solidified a mid-rotation future for himself. But, you know, I always thought that he was going to be able to succeed. He, you know, showcased a lot of, I guess, a lot of tricks. I didn't necessarily want to pin crafty, tricky lefty on him, but, you know, that's a guy who learned a lot as he started climbing the levels, and he was able to survive even though the stuff wasn't, you know, it wasn't there to blow you away. But yeah, I guess my guy is Quintana. Brett, who do you got?
I'll talk about two guys real quick. The first one is someone who I got a lot of flack for ranking highly the first time I publicly put out a Dynasty Prospect ranking list. This was 2012 was the first time I published a top 100. I've been putting them together for a little while, as I know Ben has as well. But I got called out by a number of people for my high ranking of Starling Marte, and it's not that I thought Marte would be the player that he is now, but he was a guy who I very much think people were underrating at the time, more because the flaws in his game were non fantasy related. He never drew walks. He doesn't have a ton of power, but he's a guy built for roto leagues. And he's someone who I've enjoyed watching develop into, you know, a really good fantasy outfielder over the past couple of seasons. The other guy who I will mention very quickly is one of my favorite pitchers to watch. And I've been talking about Cody Allen for at least 2 years now. And he is now a top five closer in baseball, in my estimation. And it's been enjoyable to watch his journey. So those are my guys. Ben, you?
Yeah. So I'm going to take a bit of a younger angle right now. I'd say one guy, once I learned how to pronounce his name, obviously Joey Gallo, who everyone pretty much universally has as a top 12, top 15 prospect now. I was riding that train quite a while ago. Obviously, the contact issues or the strikeout issues, rather, have always been a really, really significant concern. But I've just maintained that I thought he had a good eye and that, you know, he doesn't need to be perfect for that power to be pretty special. So that's one that's looking pretty good for me right now, even if we don't know if he's going to be successful in the majors yet. You know, part of Avery's question was, who's a guy who's risen to top 50 prominence? So that's a case for me. Another guy along a similar vein is Jose Peraza, who I was really pissed when Keith Law put him, I think he put him at 98 on his 2014 list, because I really thought I was going to be the first, you know, calling myself a national prospect guy is a gross overstatement, but I thought I'd get to be really the only name attached to him, and Claw kind of ruined that for me. But I've been beating that drum as well, and now he looks pretty good. And then something we don't often think about, but even last year debating Billy Hamilton, you know, a lot of people yelling at me saying, oh, he's going to be back in the minors by June. He can't hit. He's way too weak to do anything. And then, you know, I was sort of staunchly advocating for him, you know, not as an elite option, but at least as someone certainly worth rostering from a fantasy perspective. And in standard 5x5 leagues, he finished as the 12th best fantasy outfielder last year. So I'm proud of that one, because I think that's not just about scouting, but also me exhibiting an understanding of how fantasy leagues work. And not being lazy and just comparing Hamilton to other fast guys from the past that really, you know, don't share a similar set of skills other than their speed. Anyone else with a last minute name they thought of while I was speaking about Mr. Hamilton?
I don't have another name, but Brett, who are you putting Allen over if you're having him fifth in closer rankings?
Well, everyone other than Kimbrel, Chapman, Jansen, and Holland.
Okay, so you're taking him over, I guess, Betances and Robertson are kind of the two names that people tend to slot. Okay,
that's fine. I
was wondering who...
That number five spot, I mean, it's a pretty clear top four, I think. But once you get past there, it's pretty open. He's my guy.
Yeah, no, I'm totally fine. It was just out of curiosity of who he was over, and maybe if it was surprisingly one of the other names or something like that.
Nope. No, he's behind the top four. As much as I love Cody Allen, he's not one of those guys.
Right. Yet. Yeah.
All right. That sums up that one until someone asks us again in 4 months and we're lazy and do it again. let's move on to our second question. This one is from Kurt. Kurt says, hey guys, I had a fair amount of success last season carrying two catchers, Sal Perez and Carlos Santana, in my 12-team one-catcher Roto Dynasty, and was wondering how viable a year-to-year strategy this was. Having the depth at the position can prove to be immensely beneficial given the wear and tear at the position and the occasional days off that catchers receive, but would obviously only work if you have either a powerful enough offense to carry a catcher in a bench slot, or a good enough hitting catcher to plug into a utility or corner infield slot when both are playing. This worked for me with Santana last year, as he was good enough to play at corner infield, but how far down the catcher ranks can you go without sacrificing too many counting stats? At the moment, it looks like the best catchers at auction will be McCann, Wieters, and Grandal. Should I attempt the strategy again or look for depth at other positions? Thanks for the awesome podcast. So I think this is a really interesting question, and I appreciate that Kurt sort of lays out most of his, you know, requirements for this working, because I do think he hit the nail on the head for a few different points. But I'm sort of interested in the game theory behind this in terms of, you know, stacking two pretty good catchers, especially if one has CI versatility. So Mao, what say you?
Well, if you have CI versatility, that changes the complexion of the answer quite a bit. And I think that if you're going to do the two catcher strategy, it's a requirement. Like if you're positing whether or not you want to have two catchers regardless of the secondary position, then I don't think that's what you want to do. I think you want to have somebody who has a secondary flexibility. So for me, you know, me personally, and I'm going to be upfront with this, I typically punt catcher unless I get like one or two targets. So I think that for me, typically getting catchers is an afterthought, and you know, kind of rostering a second catcher isn't something that I would normally consider because I'd much rather have I'd rather have another player who can help me out in different spots, because once you get past a certain point at catcher, it just gets really ugly, and it's almost not worth rostering. And if you're going to go and reach for a second catcher up high a little bit earlier, then I wouldn't like to do it. But you know, he brings up a very good point that if you're going after, let's say, a Gattis to back up someone like Lucroy or you know, something of that ilk, if you have the roster and positional flexibility, I think that that's something that can work if you execute it correctly. You know, I still wouldn't do it, but I would understand the need and the desire for it. But Brett, well, you know, you're the catcher playing other positions guy. What do you think?
I do not like this in a 12-team league unless you are getting sort of one of a very particular group of guys. And sort of the player who I'm thinking of is Stephen Vogt, really, who is someone who has catcher eligibility plus multi-position eligibility. And if you want to use him as sort of your first guy off the bench and plug him in, you know, catcher, corner, outfield, depending on obviously what your eligibility is. But in a 12-team league, no, there's such a difference in a 12-team league versus a 16 or an 18-team league as far as how good your utility guy or last outfielder or corner infielder is going to be. In a 12-team league, that player is just going to be too good to make it worth doing a strategy like this. Now, on the other hand, you know, in a dynasty format, if you do things right, and you know, I'm curious to hear Craig's thoughts on this, because I'm going to give an example about him. Craig, we play in a 20-team dynasty league, and Craig ended up with Jonathan Lucroy and Sal Perez, and in that league with two utility spots, the guy who he wasn't playing at catcher was good enough to be the utility guy. And in that case, then you do get added benefit from it. But as far as targeting someone like that, I wouldn't bother. So Craig, I'm curious, as opposed to stating your thoughts, I'd like to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I like this strategy pretty much across the board. I think people leave a lot of at-bats on the table by only carrying one catcher. I mean, you're talking about a bench spot, and I get where so the way he put it in terms of plugging a catcher into a utility or corner infield spot if he has that ability, that's fine. But he's talking about also having a bench. And if you have a bench, I absolutely think having a decent second catcher on that bench is worth doing, just because of the number of off days that your catchers generally get. And I understand sometimes those are going to overlap, but I do think it's worth doing. And even in a 12-team league, the honest truth is that most of the time you're sitting someone who's playing. And so if that guy's a catcher versus another guy you're not going to play, at least being able to plug them in when your starting catcher is on the bench just because he needs a day of rest in real life has real value to me. As Brett said, in that league, I had those two catchers. I think I traded Perez, but I almost always carry two catchers on any team, any league that's deeper than 12 teams. I think there are some I don't have right now because it's early in the season, but by the end of the season, I generally have two catchers in every league I'm in. Ben, what say you?
I have a difficult time acknowledging this, but I largely agree with everything you just said.
I have a difficult time acknowledging that too.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
All right. let's get on to the third question real quick, because I think hacking mass is going to take us a while. And also, this is a doozy of a question. So this one is from George Bissell, who does very nice work over at TDG. And George says, "Hey, Brett, Mao, Ben, and the Earl of Sandwich, Craig, I could easily distract you with sandwich-related banter. Are mozzarella sticks a sandwich? But that's what Twitter is for. Instead, I have come to you with a legit Dynasty Trade question that I would appreciate your replacement-level advice on. 14-team Dynasty League, 25-man rosters, 280 salary cap. Players are signed to contracts of 1 to 4 years at whatever price they go for in the auction each year. I own Bryce Harper, which is great, but he has an expiring contract at the end of the season, which means I can only match whatever he goes for in next year's draft, which could be a lot if he turns into a legit superstar. I have the outfield depth to absorb trading Harper, and I'm not going to list who those players are, because A, nobody cares, and B, I'm not a douche. You're welcome. I've been offered Paul Goldschmidt, 4-year contract at $50 million per, in exchange for Harper and Victor Martinez, who is under contract for this and next season at $6. I'm looking to win now. I finished third last season, and Goldschmidt could be the piece that puts me over the top, especially since V-Mart is banged up. My question is simply, should I cash out and trade Harper now, or do I wait and hope he evolves into the franchise cornerstone we all assume he's going to be? Am I crazy to even consider trading Harper right now? If I trade him, will I end up regretting it in the long run? Thanks, George." So there's a lot going on here, and I think we've answered a lot of sort of, you know, what's a fair package for Mike Trout questions, but I don't think we've talked about, you know, a fair package for Harper that often. So I'm sort of looking forward to where this goes. Brett, lead us off.
So I guess the part I like, in theory, the trading guys before their contracts run out in a league like this, so that you don't get stuck with an expiring deal. The thing I don't like about this is the fact that he's giving up Victor Martinez, who is very cheap this year and next year. I don't think, you know, when you try to take that stuff out, if he's looking to win now, take contracts completely out of it, take everything completely out of it. Goldschmidt for Harper and Victor Martinez is not a trade that I think makes you better in 2015, even if there is a lot of outfield depth. I mean, obviously we don't know what that outfield depth is, but even if it's, you know, a guy who would be, you know, an outfield four, I still think I wouldn't do this. I would try instead to get something either better for Harper, or I mean, the problem with Harper is that he's such a good player, and there's no way for the team that's getting him to extend him. That the offers might just not be there if you're not a rebuilding team. He might just be, you know, kind of stuck in a corner and just need to ride him out until the end. Craig, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think that $50 per season makes this a no-go. I mean, you're talking about a $280 cap, so that's just over a sixth of your cap space. We don't know how much he'd kind of have to work with after this, but I guess I would wonder if we accept Brett's premise as Goldschmidt not making you better than Harper and Martinez, is no matter what Harper goes for in terms of matching him, is that plus $6 likely to exceed 50? And I guess I would be really surprised if it is, given that, you know, I guess even with a huge campaign, I struggle to see him breaking 50 in a league like this. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, Brett, am I wrong on that? 50 seems like a lot. Like, that's a top four player value. I don't know if Harper gets there, because I understand that he's a huge dynasty value, but if you're limited based on contract length, like, no one's going to buy his dynasty value. You're getting his 23 through 27 value or whatever it is. So exactly. I still struggle to see it being as high as kind of Goldschmidt's, given the precedent that Goldschmidt has set.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take if we're talking just the next 4 years, I'd take Goldschmidt over Harper. I mean, wouldn't you guess?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, given that, I just think that Goldschmidt, I mean, you're not getting value for Goldschmidt. I think he can earn that $50 depending on inflation and whatever in your league, but I don't think you're really getting value in that deal, and you're giving up. I mean, Victor Martinez is easily value. I'm not sure, maybe I'm missing it, but it doesn't really say what Harper costs, right? I mean,
no, it doesn't.
Yeah, so I mean, there's value in Harper this year. I think, you know, I don't know. I'd probably just hold on to Harper and match, and if I can, and if not, I'll move Harper midseason for something that's a little, maybe less than Goldschmidt, but maybe a better value contract wise. Ben, how would you handle it?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's dead on again. I sort of wish Goldschmidt was more affordable, because then I think this would be an even more interesting question. You know, if you put Goldschmidt down at 35 a season, then I'm thinking a lot longer and harder about it. But you covered all the reasons why, you know, with him at 50, I just don't see the value. Mal?
You know, I agree with you and Craig, but I just want to point out that before you got into the meat of the email, Ben, there was like a little panic pause when I think you saw the length of what you're going to have to go through. How did you feel about that, reading that email?
The bigger issue was I drank a lot of water, and it actually was water, immediately before I answered the email, and then I had to burp. So I was trying to time my burp without disrupting the natural flow of the email.
That's a pro. It's a pro right there.
Yeah, if Farron is listening right now, he's going to be just so impressed.
That's why you're the host.
Yeah, that's why I get the big bucks. So if Harper, let's make up a salary for Harper. Let's say Harper is at 25 this year. If in addition to Harper and VMart going, he gets Goldschmidt for 50 and Enya for 10, does that change your answer? Welcome back to episode 46 of Tino. I hope you used that break to determine exactly how much you would pay for Enya's services. And now we are going to engage in the 2015 Hacking Mass Live Draft, which you may say is not quite the Dynasty League purview, but it is at least a fantasy league in that we are selecting players from an existing pool and we hope to win or lose based on their performance. I'm going to assume that most Tino listeners are indeed familiar with the Hacking Mass rules, but just in case they are not, I will read them as they're laid out on the BP site right now. And just a quick note before I get started, when this podcast comes out, you'll still have time to enter your own team as well, so I definitely suggest that you do so. But Hacking Mass 2015, each team has 10 players, one catcher and one per infield position, one at each outfield position, and two pitchers. Here are the rules. Simply pick the players who you think will be the stiffest at each position. A team's aggregate stiffness is measured by summing the ESPN, exuded stiff points, net, of all the players on your team. For hitters, ESPN is 0.700, minus his OBP, minus his slugging, and multiplied by plate appearances. For pitchers, the formula is the pitcher's ERA minus 3.74 times his innings pitched divided by 3. This results in similar stiffness scores for the firmest hitters and pitchers. Where do these values come from? They are league average values from the previous season. In each case, it isn't enough for a player to simply suck. Somehow the stiffest of the stiff must find a way to remain in the lineup or rotation. Possession of incriminating photos of managers and GMs, telekinesis of ink onto lineup cards, large contracts that need justification, and ties to the underworld can all be important attributes of your players, besides their lack of hitting and pitching talent. So I think that does a pretty good job of laying out what we're really looking for here. Rather than just open up this pool to all players, we figured that would be sort of hard to follow in audio format. So instead, what we're going to do is do this draft round by position by position. So obviously, that means we can't do a pure snake. So basically, what we did is we just did a sliding scale so that everyone gets a roughly comparable amount of picks per slot as we go along. So what we'll do is just make it very clear who's picking what player as we go along. We'll keep track of these teams, and we will see who is the best at knowing who is bad when the season is over. So with the first pick in the 2015 Tino Hacking Mass Draft, for the catcher position, Brett, you are up.
All right. So this is this was tough between two teammates, but I am going to go with Tuffy Ghostwitch for the first overall pick in the draft.
He should get
a fair amount of playing time in Arizona, given that they have literally nobody else, and he is just terrible at baseball. So, Tuffy Ghostwitch, number one pick. Who would have thought?
That's how you lead off a draft, Brett.
Yeah. Craig, you are up next.
And we're going straight catchers, right? By position, I will take the newly dubbed L.O. Porquatra, Christian Betancourt.
Oh, damn it. Snatched right before me.
Because he is just terrible at hitting, and he's easily their best option at catcher. I don't know if AJ Pierzynski is going to last a season there, and I honestly don't know who else they have behind him. So it's just, bad approach. He's got a little bit of pop, but it's a combination of all the things kind of Ben talked about going into this, which is that, I think he's going to play a lot for a catcher because of his defense, and he'll suck in fantasy. So it's up to Ben now.
No, it's a strong pick. That's where I was going. So I'm a little disheartened. But thankfully, catching is such a goddamn black hole that it really isn't that tough for me to adjust here. And I am going with Brian Holiday. And that's because at this point, a stiff breeze is likely to knock Avila out for the remainder of the season. There's not a ton of catching depth in Detroit, and Brian Holiday is really bad. So I'm basically counting on the suckiness outweighing what won't be a tremendous amount of playing time, probably. But if Avila gets hurt, which he will because it's Avila, and Holiday gets 300 plate appearances, I think this is going to be a strong play for me. Mal?
I'm going to give you the big old fuck you, Ben, and I'm going to take Alex Avila because at this point, all I really need from him is 300 plate appearances, 300 at-bats, and, he played 124 games last year, but, if he catches a foul ball off the mask, it might be over for him. But he's terrible at hitting things. And illustrated quite well. They have nothing. They have nothing behind him. That'll be,
It's interesting to me because I actually think James McCann is pretty good, and I think he's gonna play. So I think that's interesting.
Well, I would just say that if Avila gets hurt and McCann ends up being the primary, then Holiday would still be McCann's backup, which means he's gonna get some time.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that. And I think that's probably likely to happen. I agree. I don't have a problem with either of these guys being hacking mass selections. It's mostly just that I actually think James McCann is pretty good.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
So.
Right. Craig, you now have the first pick for first baseman. So continue speaking in your, I won't call it a soothing voice, in your voice.
Okay. grading, I've heard.
That's more apt, but I heard. I wasn't going to go there.
I appreciate it. This is interesting. I'm looking over the options. I'm going to go with I'm worried he'll end up being replaced, but I'll go with Yonder Alonso. San Diego is a rough place to hit, especially when you don't have talent. And I think, well, Yonder Alonso has talent, but it's not well suited to San Diego. And my biggest concern here is that Will Myers ends up their first baseman or something like that. But hopefully they kind of stick it out with their terrible infield and hold on to Alonso.
Yeah. No, it's a reasonable goal. I'm feeling pretty good about this one. This is who I already had in my Hacking Mass League, and I'm happy you didn't snatch him away from me. I'm going with Kendrys Morales. I know that there's the potential for him to not be awful. He wasn't awful in 2013, but oh dear God, was he awful last year. And the Royals are just stuck with him if he's not good, and that's a tough park to hit in. So sort of the inverse of Holiday, where I wasn't sure he was going to get a lot of playing time, but I knew he'd be god-awful. Morales might be okay, but he's going to get all of the playing time. And I'm pretty hopeful that, you know, he hits somewhere around 230.
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting because I think he's had a couple good games, so you're already in the hole there.
Right. Well, I did some research on his spring training stats, so I feel pretty comfortable with projecting him for failure.
Fair. Yeah, good point.
Thank you. I thought it was a great point.
Strong analysis.
Yeah. Mao, who's going to perform poorly at first base with you?
You know, this is a fun position to try to pick out some really bad guys. There are a couple of different options here. I'm kind of in between three guys at this point, which, you know, we'll save that clip for later, I guess.
And you feel right at home. Yeah.
Oh, I do.
Comfort.
There's a lot of comfort here. But I'm going to go with Logan Morrison because I think it's an awful park for him.
It's a good pick.
Yeah, and he's just bad. And I really like rooting against him because he's kind of a dick.
I was going to say, it's an awful park for him, namely in that it's a baseball park.
Yes.
So, that hasn't worked terribly well.
It has major league pitching in it, so it's bad for him.
Exactly. Very frequently, yeah. Yeah, so. that's a good one. All right, Brett.
All right. I was eyeing a couple of the guys that were taken already, so I'm going to make a pick that makes me a little bit sad.
Dom Smith?
No, fuck you. The guy who I am going to take is Jonathan Singleton. I think I still believe in Singleton in the long term, but man, he did not look ready for the majors last year. And if he is terrible this year, then I'm not sure if he will even get much playing time. But given the difficulty of grabbing a first baseman in Hacking Mass, I am going to take Singleton and hope he either doesn't play or plays poorly. Mm-hmm. So it's sad, but it's come to this.
I understand. All right, well, it's my turn to lead off with second base, and I'm actually going back to the Royals and taking Omar Infante, who is not quite human refuse for real baseball purposes yet, although he's quickly reaching that point. But you got to remember that Hacking Mass penalizes you for OBP and slugging, and that is not where Mr. Infante succeeds. So I think this is my strongest pick to date because I bet – you know, now that Giavatel is not there, who are they going to call up to also not do well? So I like Infante's odds of reaching at least 450 plate appearances and not being very good. Up to you, Mal.
So this is second base here?
Yeah.
Okay, so this, this is kind of a difficult decision for me here because the team really likes flipping their players all over the place. But I'm going to go with Eric Sogard here, mainly because he doesn't really do anything well at all, offensively. Yeah. And he's going to play because they love playing everybody.
Face of MLB, Eric Sogard. Well, nearly.
Nearly. Yeah. Before MLB rigged it so that he wouldn't be face of MLB.
Right. All right. Now it is back to Brett.
Sounds good. I had Eric Sogard all queued up and ready to go, but such is life. So I am going to take someone who I think will end up backing into way too much playing time this year and be terrible, even though he is in quite a friendly ballpark, and that is Steven Drew.
Yep.
I just don't. I don't see it. I don't think it's happening for him. And the Yankees are old and bad enough at the infield that I think. I think there's a pretty good chance that he gets 400 or 450 at bats, regardless of how terrible he is.
That's who I was considering. He was neck and neck with Infante for ineptitude, so it's a strong pick, I think.
Thank you. So now it is back to Craig for the final second base pick.
Yeah, I think this is tough. Oh, you know who I'm going to take actually is DJ LeMahieu.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, yeah, no, he doesn't. He's 6'4 and hits like he's 5'3. Or he's like 6'3 or something. He's bigger than he should be. And he has a last name I hate to spell. And I very understand confusing. He's in Colorado, but he's just so bad at hitting. And he's really good at defense, and they kind of don't have another second base option. So they really like him, and I really like him to not be good at hitting.
I mean, he's not that awful at actually just hitting for average, but he doesn't walk and he doesn't hit for power even in Coors. So you're in good shape. I mean, he's basically younger Infante right. That way.
Well, I mean, my options here are basically, you know, like it's either him or someone who's really fast and sucks at everything else. But those guys who steal a ton of bases are going to rack up points in, like, the ESPN player rater. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like D. Gordon or – I mean, I was tempted by Micah Johnson.
Yeah, that would have been a good
real bad. But they also have a lot of trash to sift through at second base in Chicago. Like, they can put Carlos Sanchez in there if Johnson sucks and,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, in Colorado, it's really just he's going to get playing time. I mean, he – you know, 267, 348, or 315, 348 last year for DJ in 530 at-bats. It's pretty good in this context.
I agree.
Yeah. So that's where I'm going.
Right. I appreciate that.
So I guess it goes to Mao to kick off third base?
It does.
So for third base, I'm just going to go, you know, we were just talking about the White Sox. I'm going to go with Connor Gillespie. The White Sox have not a lot of depth at most notably catcher, second base, and third base, and they don't really have anything. I mean, Gordon Beckham can go in there and play third base, but, you know, I don't necessarily think that that's going to happen. I think Connor Gillespie is going to get 400 at-bats at third.
Strong, strong pick. It is now back to Brett.
All right. I'm going to go on plate appearances and ballpark here, and I am going to take Will Middlebrooks. I don't think he's a change of scenery guy. I think he probably needs a new sport.
Wow.
Damn.
Just for that Dom Smith shit I gave you. It's okay. I can take it.
I kid, but I he
no, you don't.
Middlebrooks absolutely does not get on base, and San Diego is not a very friendly place to hit for power. So I like his chances of racking up at bats, but not really being able to do either. And since their alternative is playing Yoenhervis Solarte there and not playing Solarte at one of the other three positions that the Padres are also terrible at, is probably an okay bet. So that's my guy. Now back to Craig.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Casey McGee. Mm-hmm. Casey McGee is, I mean, he was playing in Japan a few years ago, and he came back and he had a really great year, you know, in terms of RBI for the Marlins. But the Giants, you know, it's an odd number year, and I can't imagine this is going to work out well. It's a hard park to hit for power in, and he's just, he's a great story, but he'll be even better for Hacking Mass, in my opinion. So, Cardsley, you want to finish out the hot corner?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Chris Johnson for the Braves, who I'm thrilled he's still here. I guess there is some risk that he's traded to a more homer-friendly park. But even so, never been more than 15. Power's been down the last 2 years. Walks less than FDR. I feel really good about this. I think I'm in good shape to have him do Chris Johnson things, which is hit enough to make people who don't understand advanced stats be mildly interested while being real bad at everything else.
Yeah, it was down to him or McGee, and I don't know.
You got to go with your gut, which is McGee's gut, I guess. So yeah,
and also Ample.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
True.
Brett, lead us off with shortstop. You're back in the front.
This is such a tough one because there's so many players to
really,
choose from.
Really are
in shortstop. So I'm just essentially going to pull one of five or six names that I really like out of a hat here, and I'm going to go with Adeniyi Echevarria. Mm. He'll play, and he sucks. So that's my hard hitting analysis.
Strong reasoning.
Yeah. That's the whole point of the game, right? So I will now throw it to Craig.
Yeah, God, this is tough because there's so many good options.
There are. They're literally like 15 to 20 really good options.
Yeah, I'm going to pull a last minute switch. I had been planning on taking someone else in this division, but I'm going to go with Freddy Galvis.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Strong.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to explain it. He's on the Phillies. That's,
you know? rest your case.
Yeah, exactly. Ben?
Very quickly. Sorry to cut you off.
No, we don't want to stop the Freddy Galvis talk. Go ahead.
No. If you drafted the Phillies, how do you think you would do in hacking mass?
Oh, that's a good question.
If you have to pick one team, I think they're the front runners, right?
Well, them and the Braves.
Braves, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Depends. Can the Braves face Matt Latos every time?
Oh, yeah. God. That didn't go well.
No.
What is it? Is ERA like 96 or something, right?
No, it's 108.
108. I'm sorry. I didn't need to undersell him.
That's not ERA plus either. That's straight up ERA. That's, yeah.
108. Oh, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I went back and forth on this one a few times, but I'm willing to bet this is the other guy Craig was talking about. I'm going to stick with the Braves and go with Simmons because defense doesn't matter, and he's going to get a ton of playing time, and he also hates getting on base. So worst comes to worst, you know, he hits 15-plus homers, and I don't lose as many points as I'd like to for slugging, but he's probably going to get 500 to 600 plate appearances, and defense and dick size, no count in hacking mass, so here we are.
I was really hoping that Simmons was going to be there, but that was probably hoping against hope, so you know, there are just a shit ton of options here.
I think there's one really strong one left.
I'm going with Jose Iglesias.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. Not who I was thinking, but still good.
I could just like stick my hand into the shortstop barrel and come up with a good name here, honestly.
That's probably true.
Imagery I don't enjoy, but you're correct.
So, you know, he's real good at the defense and real bad at the plate. So, you know, hard hitting analysis right there. And So who's the name you guys are thinking of though?
I'm shocked that Zach Cozart is
Zach Cozart.
I'm shocked no one took Nick Ahmed.
I was thinking about Ahmed Cozart.
I don't know. Arizona's pretty dumb.
That's not a bad point.
Yeah.
But are we sure they're not going to put, like, Trumbo at shortstop and just, like, sit him down and have him knock down things?
They might. I wouldn't put it past them.
Brett, it'd be past Trumbo. Brett, who did you take? I forget.
I took Echevarria.
Thank you. Okay, Craig, you are you're in left field.
Yeah, this is kind of a tough one, and there's a weird eligibility option potentially at the top. I'm going to eat the stolen bases, and I'm going to go with Ben Revere because he's available, and he just all he does is hit for average. He's and run, obviously, but he's just absolutely brutal in every other category. So I think there's a, I'm just going to throw this out there. I think there's a really strong Phillies option still out there, but who I think I would have taken otherwise, but I'll go with Revere right now.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. It's not a bad choice. Oh crap. I just looked up a stat. All right, give me like 5 seconds to see if I want to change my mind. Just
go real quick. Lord.
We haven't done it yet. We haven't done it yet. I'm allowed. Give me this one. Oh, God. Not Junior Lake. Thankfully, that's done now.
Is it ever done?
I hope not. I would love for this to just – I would love for the Junior Lake experiment to last well into my 30s. But I don't think that's terribly likely to happen. All right. Well, I'm going to go with – I'm a little bit worried about playing time, but then again, there really aren't that many competent outfielders on this team anymore. So I'm going to go with Craig Gentry, who's generally only received about 300 plate appearances each of the last few seasons, but not great when he does. I know he walks a little bit, so that's scaring me. But, 2013 was really the only year in which he walked a lot. He doesn't hit for average. He doesn't hit for – he hits for negative power, honestly. People – somewhere in the universe, home runs are subtracted to make up for Craig Gentry. So I'm feeling good about it as long as he can get me 300 plate appearances. Mao?
There are some good options here. Now, your Gentry pick is making me scramble. Because it's a really, really, really strong pick. I really like what you did there. Picking out a really bad player. It's just,
I appreciate that, man.
I'm impressed. I'm in between two options here, but I'm just going to go with Kevin Kiermaier and eat the power a little bit. This might end up being a bad pick, but fuck, man. You fucked me with Gentry. Shit.
No comment.
So I guess this leaves me as closing out the category.
It does.
So I'm going to take the guy who was vaguely referenced before, who was my number one pick for the spot, and I'm going to take Grady Sizemore.
Yeah.
I was joking around with Mike yesterday, and we were talking about the Phillies outfield because somehow we always end up talking about the Phillies outfield, and he said someone told him that Grady Sizemore looked cooked, and I told him that he didn't look cooked. He looked charred. So it's not going to – I love Grady Sizemore. I will root for him until the day he retires. But, man, it just looks like it's over for him. And I think he could rack up about 200 or 250 at-bats this year. And that should be enough to possibly lead this category.
Well, their other option is Jeff Francoeur, so.
That it is, until Michael Franco comes up.
Oh, you have him in left?
No, I think they'll play him at third. I think they'll move Cody Ashe to left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I obviously Sizemore caught my eye, but I was just worried about, between the playing time and the injuries, I was worried about him not being on the field enough. But he is, as someone who had to watch him last year, I think he just finished his third swing of the season. He is very done. All right, so I have a bevy of really. This is tough for me because there are a lot of very, very bad offensive center fielders, and specifically there are a few options I could have gone with on this team, but. Because he fits so well into what people think should be the leadoff role, I think I'm going to go with Eric Young Jr. here.
God damn it.
Yeah, I know. And the recent acquisition of another center fielder muddles this a little bit for me, but I'm still confident enough in his ability to steal bases but be sucky everywhere else that I think this could actually be a pretty big win for me. Now,
Playing time is going to be a little bit of a concern here for me because he might get hurt, but I'm going to go with Michael Bourne. He of the declining stolen base numbers and not a whole hell of a lot of else regarding an offensive skill set. They're going to play him. They owe him a lot of money, and he doesn't really get on base all that much, and he hasn't been running for a while, so that's who I'm going with.
All right. So I thought one of you guys was going to help me out. My eye was immediately drawn to two different players, and they're both still available. So I am going to take the guy who I think will get the most playing time, and I'm going to go with Anthony Gose. He is the best center field option they have on that team, and he just is allergic to getting on base. It's a similar skill set to the other guy I was thinking about, but I think Ghost gets at least 100 to 150 more at bats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Craig?
Oh, man. It's rough. It's rough out here. I'm guessing it's not the guy Brett is talking about, and I think it's a little off-board, but I think he might be done, and he just plays in a brutal place to hit, and that's Austin Jackson. I think he might be really bad now, and Seattle isn't going to help him, and I don't think he hasn't been running as much the last few years. I don't think he's very good, so that's who I'm going with.
Yeah.
For the record, since he wasn't taken,
yeah,
Jordan Schaefer was the other guy who I was thinking of. I don't know how, even a team as bad as Minnesota, I don't know how he gets 300 at bats. I don't know. Maybe he will, but that just seems impossible.
It would be impressive.
Yeah, and that's from someone who just picked him up in labor.
Still, such a weird phrase, but
yeah.
All right, we are back then to Mao at the top for right fielders.
There are quite a few interesting options here. I think that some of the playing time stuff in Atlanta, it makes me want to take this player, and I'm going to take it even though the at-bats might be scarce, but I'm going to go ahead and just take Cameron Maben because he's never been good.
I don't see him as eligible.
He's not?
No, he's on the center field list.
Oh, motherfucker. All right, hold on.
Because that's who I was looking at for center field instead of EY, but...
No, all right. I apologize for fucking this up.
Pretty bad.
this is pretty embarrassing for you, Mal.
This is really bad. I'm just going to go with Torii Hunter, because fuck it.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a panic pick, Mal.
No, it's a panic pick, but I'm sticking with Torii Hunter. Somebody picked... Right. Am I reading this right? Somebody picked... No, I'm not reading this right. Yeah, I'm going with
Torii. How you doing over there, buddy?
No, I'm doing well. Doing all right.
No, not so great?
No, I'm doing all right. I'm confident about the Torii Hunter pick.
Hmm. All right, well, I think that silence says how the rest of us feel. Brett, your pick.
I'm again... really, really torn between two options. One of them is very off the board, especially considering where we play this game. One of them is probably not going to get enough playing time. So I am going to go with the... fuck it. I'm going to go with the guy who's going to get the playing time. I'm going to take Steven Souza. I don't know. I think he's going to play, and I think he is going to have an adjustment period. And I don't think his OBP or slugging is going to bring him above the baseline, especially in that ballpark.
It's an interesting pick.
Little off the board. Probably not very popular with Pakoda. I may get kicked out of the site when I try to enter this in, but
that's or for any other reason because it's, but yeah. Craig.
So I, this is tough. So if someone was taken at another position, I can't take them at this one. I just want to be clear. Like if someone was eligible for left field, I can't take them for right field if they've been selected.
That sounds too easy. I'm going to go with no.
Okay. No, that's fine. Okay. So, man, I'm torn because there's a really obvious selection, and then there's the one I want to make.
Do the one you want to make. Give the people what they want.
Yeah, I didn't do the obvious one. Come on.
All right, I'm going to take Yasmani Tomas.
Damn it, Craig.
Damn it. You encouraged me.
I know, but I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him in Arizona twice. He didn't hit a ball to the left side of second base. He's just, and I mean, the layoff is a factor, and I'm not saying he's done long term, but you know, he just did not look good. He does not look in shape. My biggest concern with selecting him in this is that they managed to do the smart thing and put him in the minors to start the season. So hopefully he can kind of pseudo mash at Reno, which is a great place to hit, and they'll call him up and he'll be terrible. So what are you going to do, Ben?
Well, I'm just all screwed up now because I thought for sure I had that pick all squared away. That was going to be my one cutesy pick too. Like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. And now I'm scrambling. Well, I got to go boring. I'm just going to go with Gerardo Parra because someone on the Brewers outfield is going to get hurt. So
I can't believe the guy I thought was most obvious didn't get picked.
Who did you think was most obvious?
Dom Brown.
Dom Brown. Yeah.
I'm honestly wondering if he's going to get the time.
Who else are they going to play?
Well,
what do you mean anybody? That's Jeff Francoeur is the other anybody.
It's the Phillies. Yeah. They're going to play Jeff Francoeur.
Yeah, they might.
No, Dom Brown's a good. I should have gone with that instead of Hunter.
The other guy who I was thinking about going with was for actually a very similar reason to Gerardo Parra, but I was thinking about taking Logan Schaefer.
Right.
But he's probably going to max out at about 150 to 200 at bats, and while he is super super terrible, that's just not enough.
Yeah, I feel bad because I like Parra in real life, but
so do I.
What are you going to do? We don't make the rules. All right. This next one is back to Brett for first pitcher.
Oh, I didn't know I was up first here. I am not prepared for this.
It's okay. Just keep talking until you figure it out.
Latos has a 108 ERA.
I'm very tempted to go with Latos just because of.
Do you know what that puts him on pace for?
What? Oh, 108 ERA. Yeah.
That's true.
Did I make an okay pace joke? Can we recognize that after a second?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh wow. Yeah. I said okay, Matt. I just said okay.
Okay.
Yeah, this is an extraordinarily long list.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys who throw baseballs
poorly.
Yes. Yeah. Judging from the numbers on here,
not going to pick Edwin Jackson?
I'm not going to pick Edwin Jackson because he's not going to get. I don't think he's going to make a start.
You know why?
Because he's bad.
Yeah. Oh,
man, there's a lot of opportunity for you to pick up Montero and Jackson here.
Yeah, it's taken me a long time to get to the point where I can say that.
I'm proud. I
think I'm okay.
Have the meeting.
I'm gonna go with someone who I think is. This is gonna be the same mistake that I made last year when I took Lucas Harrell as my first starting pitcher because I thought he was gonna be just good enough to stay in the rotation. I'm gonna take Nick Martinez
because
he's just so bad, and I don't see this working well for him, but hopefully he can throw 100 innings because everyone in Texas gets hurt.
I don't like it. I mean, it's a good pick. I forgot about him on purpose.
He's got a very forgettable name as well.
He does. So, Craig?
Yeah, I'm going to take Jason Marquis. That's right. He's still pitching. He's still pitching, and he's pitching in a shitty pitcher's park. And I think, again, another great story, but, you know, he's old and pitching in Cincinnati, and I normally wouldn't pick him because I think he'll get replaced, but at the same time, who are they going to replace him with? Like, Cingrani, who they already, I mean, they just made the decision to send him to the pen. I don't think Stevenson or Lorenzen are ready, Their pitching staff is bad, and I think he is one of the reasons.
They might replace him with Paul Mahalan.
Oh, God.
I just can't believe that. Like, okay, you say what you want about Cingrani, but Jason Marquis? Come on. Come on, Cincinnati.
He throws more than one pitch.
All right. I'm just gonna move on. This is the guy that just defines this entire exercise. We were lucky enough to see him in the spring. I'm going with opening day starter Kyle Kendrick.
You're banking the loss right now.
Oh, man.
You know what?
He was so good.
I feel confident. And if I'm wrong and he is amazing, I'll be okay with that too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he actually finishes with what for Hacking Mass is negative points, so if he's actually decent, I will strongly consider buying a Kyle Kendrick Rockies jersey.
Wow. Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with John Danks here because they owe him a lot of money. He's really bad at pitching. He's probably mid-80s by now. And it's just not going to go well down there. I don't really see it going well. Nope. And he's going to pitch all year. All year.
Yeah, he will. He'll do that. Craig?
Yeah, I've got to do some thinking on this. Right?
There's a lot of great choices.
Yeah, I mean, that's the...
It's a lot of really, really bad pitchers.
Yeah. The key is finding the guy who's going to stay in the rotation.
It's tough.
I still don't think it's tough at this juncture.
I need to pick which Diamondback pitcher I'm going to take.
Oh, well, I'm taking the other one, so it's perfect. Because we're talking about the same two guys, so...
Two guys? The Diamondbacks have a full rotation of candidates for.
But there are two that are especially putrid.
that's true.
Oh, Craig, this is so us.
All right, you just got to give me a minute here.
Oh, Craig, flip a coin.
Your mind kind of gets you forget how many, you know, there are so many, you just get overwhelmed. That's
one way to put it.
Shut up. I'm going to take. Jeremy Hellickson.
Strong.
It's not going to go well. I kind of wanted to troll and take Rick Porcello, but
I mean, I don't think he's close. So bad.
No, he's not so bad, but Boston could be rough for him, potentially. Just playing in the AL East stadiums could be tough. But the pick is Hellickson. It's not going to go well.
No. That's a bummer. So actually, the other guy I was going to pick, I just looked up, and he didn't make their rotation because I was going to take Vidal Nuno, but he's
still option.
They still have a soft body. They still have a soft body in the rotation, the Diamondbacks.
He's their opening day starter.
Wait, I thought it was Colmenter, Ruby, Hellickson, Anderson, and Bradley.
You don't want to take Colmenter?
No, I'm still listen. I was set with Nuno. I looked. He's not there. Obviously, I'm considering Colmenter. I'm not a moron. But I just want to let it breathe for a second. You took a second. Brett took a second.
Yeah, that's fair.
Just going to scroll through a little. I'm really disappointed. Nuno was just ready. My body was ready. All right, so this is only... God, Colmenter or this guy?
I have...
Mm-hmm. Door number two.
It's tough. It's really tough for me. No, Colmenter. Sorry for that. I was thinking about Ricky Nolasco, but I'm still gonna go. I'm still gonna go with Colmenter.
Well, I'm gonna take Ricky Nolasco.
It's just a good pick.
Yeah, it's just solid.
It's grounded. I just think Nolasco has the chance to at least flirt with average, and I don't.
Yeah, I don't hate Nolasco. It's still a good pick.
You wanted to take Rick Porcello. Yeah.
No, I understand. Again, that was a troll move.
I was in between. Well, I'll let Brett pick.
All right. Well, I'm gonna double down in Texas, and I'm gonna take Colby Lewis. Again, I just so bad. And with Darvish out, they're going to struggle to field a rotation for a while.
Yeah.
And it's going to include both of those guys, and it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, I was in between Colby Lewis, Yovani Gallardo, and Justin Masterson.
I was thinking Joe Kelly.
Joe Kelly's a good choice, too.
The thing is, if Joe Kelly has like 7 bad starts, he could very easily be out of the rotation.
That's why I didn't.
Right. Yeah. All right, anyone have a pick they feel particularly good or particularly bad about now that they're looking at it? I wish I'd done a little more research before this. I'm worried Brian Holiday is not going to get enough playing time, and then I'm going to miss out on a potential gold mine because catchers are so awful.
I definitely fucked up Hunter, but I'm really happy about Sogard.
Yeah.
I'm very worried about my Sousa pick, but I'm standing behind it.
I feel great.
I think we should. I think we did this live.
I think the biggest concern for me.
I feel like we should all get like one do over later, off air, not now, just before we submit.
Are we figuring out what the winner gets between the four of us? The highest finisher.
The winner.
I mean, it should be a Kyle Kendricks jersey, obviously.
It should be actually a Kyle Kendricks jersey. Actually,
okay, yeah, so we'll just do it this way.
I'm open to other ideas. I just
the person with the worst score has to buy the person with the best score an ironic jersey of their choosing.
Okay,
I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
Does it have to be someone on their Hacking Mass team?
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. I like that caveat. Mm-hmm. Has to buy them the jersey of the worst person on their Hacking Mass team.
With the like, as in the bet, like the highest performance.
Yes, right, the person with the highest performance. ESPN.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's strong. I like that.
I really like. I'm gunning for that Kendricks jersey, man. I can't wait. I can't wait for him to get a package from Mauricio Rubio on October 4th. Just a little Kyle Kendrick action.
It'll be the first one they've ever sold.
I'm sure he has a family.
I guarantee you, somebody bought in after that start yesterday. Yeah. Someone was like, yes, Kyle Kendrick.
Hold on, I'll do a little Twitter research.
Figure it out.
All right. I have some redemption to do from last year. Last year, my Hacking Mass team was laughably terrible. I think I had the worst Hacking Mass team of any BP staff member. Wow. I think it was a tight race between me and Wilson for the worst Hacking Mass team, and that's what you get for choosing both Lonnie Chisenhall and Dallas Keuchel.
Oh, Dallas Keuchel.
Chisenhall was a real good, was a strong pick though. That's not on you.
Yeah, the Keuchel pick really hurt me.
Yeah,
the big question here is I had already selected one as like because we, you know, we Rob asked us to look into, you know, putting together a team to make sure everything was working correctly. So I had filled out a team, and so I'm hoping he'll let me change it.
You can still change it right now.
I just, I asked the man himself.
Oh, okay.
I did it as we were going. I mean, I'd already said
okay. Too, so. I messed that up. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yes. But okay. just for everyone listening, go to Baseball Prospectus, play Hacking Mass. It is a really, really fun game. And it takes literally 5 minutes to do, and you don't have to do anything the rest of the year other than check how terrible your players are. So go sign up.
And I'll awesome. I think that, you know, I think we should get something little for the Tino listener with the worst team as well, or the best team.
Oh, we could do that. We could do like a mug or something.
Oh, I already know exactly what they'll get. I'll tell you guys off air. I don't want to.
Oh, okay, good. I'm excited.
Yes. So everyone, go play, and then. Well, how are we going to know if? How are we going to know if there's a Tino listener that submitted their?
Well, they'll just tell us their team name. You can look up.
Yeah.
Anybody.
I think honor system. I don't care.
Yeah. Honor system works fine.
What could possibly go wrong with trusting people on the internet to use an honor system?
Nothing.
Oh man, we should draft more things on the podcast.
I agree. I like drafts.
It's so easy.
Remember when we drafted superpowers?
I do remember when we drafted superpowers.
That was not on the podcast.
No,
that was on G Chat, and it was great.
It was. Yeah. Well,
Yeah, didn't Mao pick like omnipotence and like regeneration or something? Yeah. Mao just cheated.
Exactly. No, it was such bullshit.
Yeah. Mao is basically God. Is Mao's power.
Yeah. Hey. It's not, well, I mean, fuck you guys, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah, Mao did that, and then Ben selected the ability to have Enya play in any room that he walked into.
That is a legitimate superpower that has made me many dollars. Welcome back to episode 46 of Tino. As always, we are going to send you out with a little housekeeping. By the time this podcast is live, the three new BP local sites should all be live. So please go to bpboston.com, bpbronx.com, and bpwrigleyville.com to check out the new Red Sox, Yankees, and Cubs sites, respectively. Please rate and review Tino on iTunes. We've had a bunch of good reviews lately, but the more the merrier, and getting to over 100 before the season is complete would be fantastic. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast, like us on Facebook, and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Dynasty Guru on Twitter. You can find Mauricio at mrubio52. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in crankily defensive, Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thanks for listening and have a good night.
Oof. Right. That outro was not hacking mass worthy.
Good episode.
Yeah, I go for the package that results in me getting Enya.
Yeah, you go for the Enya package.
I'm just not surprised Mal went for a package.
Yeah, I'm also, that's like a very solid podcast title, actually, Enya package.
I think I'm not surprised Mal went for the package is even more apt, but...
that might work, too. One of those two.
It all works.
Yeah, somehow.
All right, I have to cram for this real quick.
Yeah, I'm going to get a beer for this. This is going to be fun.